Hey guys, it's Albert back with a special extended edition of the podcast for your Thanksgiving commute. We're going to open things up by talking about what everybody's talking about, the big Monday night Rams-Chiefs showdown. Then Jenny and Connor come in for the news. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 11 is in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And there's only one place to start this week. That's with what we all witnessed on Monday night at the Coliseum. The week was a little messy. There's obviously a lot of serious life things going on in Southern California. This game was supposed to be played in Mexico City. The Rams spent the week in Colorado to get ready for to play at altitude before the game got moved back. And so through all of that, we come back and we get what I think undoubtedly is the game of the year. When you look back at the 2018 season, it'll probably be the most memorable game. The Chiefs and Rams, the third highest scoring game in NFL history. And we're going to bring in Jenny and Connor here in a second. I'm going to just lead off with three takeaways that I have from this one. Number one, I think that there's a new way of playing defense in the NFL right now. And I think we saw it in Super Bowl 52 where you see some teams almost intentionally building their defense with holes, it feels like to me. And what you're looking for is difference-making players, guys who can affect the game at the end in important situations. Last year, it happened in the Super Bowl, and I think anybody who was sitting watching that game back in February could have told you there's a good chance a big defensive play is going to be the difference here because the teams were moving the ball up and down the field. And lo and behold, Brandon Graham's the guy who makes that play. We saw that last night. Samson Ekubom isn't decent player, not this great difference-making player, but because Aaron Donald's playing on that line, because Ndamukong Suh's playing on that line, because now Dante Fowler's there, he's in a position to make the game-altering play. And so you've got a defense in the Rams that's capable of making the play that the Eagles were capable of making last year. So that's my first takeaway. My second takeaway, I don't think you can win a Super Bowl playing this way exclusively. I personally think this is why the Saints remain the best team in the league, because I think they're the most well-rounded roster in the league, and we'll get to them in a minute. But history shows us that at some point you're going to have to win a rock fight. Last year, the Eagles won that rock fight in the divisional playoff round in their win over the Falcons. Eventually, there's going to be a team somewhere along the line that's going to take you out of your comfort zone and make you win a different way. And so can the Chiefs or the Rams win that sort of game in January? We'll see. And my third takeaway from, again, what was an outstanding, outstanding product on Monday night to watch, I think that this is kind of the outgrowth of what we've seen over the last couple of years with the open-mindedness at the NFL level to incorporate different things creatively into the NFL. And it's, you know, I think back to like when I was a kid, and we're going to bring Jenny and Connor in now. I think back, guys, when it's like when I was a kid, and like you'd watch like those great Nebraska teams, and Tommy Frazier would rush for 200 yards, and NFL people would always say, oh, that'll never work. That'll never work here. You see what Steve Spurrier was doing, and, you know, throwing the ball up and down the field, and that'll never work at the NFL level. That's just college stuff. That's all gimmicky. And I think like that's a big piece of this too, is two of the more open-minded coaches in the NFL are getting it done. Doug Peterson, we saw it from him last year. I think we saw it in the offseason with so many teams going and visiting Lincoln Riley in Lincoln, Nebraska, or not Lincoln, Nebraska, in Norman, Oklahoma. I think we're seeing it with the Bears, like what Matt Nagy is doing with Chicago. I think part of this is the open-mindedness. So those are my three takeaways. My three takeaways from this game, again, you know, you see, I think, a different style of playing defense here where, you know, you're really gunning for the one play that could win a game like this, and defenses that are built with those sorts of playmakers. Number two, I don't think you can win a title exclusively playing this way. Maybe the rest of the year will prove me wrong. And then number three, I think this is partly a product of all the open-mindedness we're seeing in the NFL that probably wasn't there 15 or 20 years ago.
And, you know, Goff and Mahomes are both air raid. They came from air raid systems in college, which for so long was taboo in the NFL. And I think what you're seeing is guys like Sean McVay and Andy Reid, instead of saying, okay, you know, he hasn't taken a ton of snaps under center, you know, you think, well, think about all the defenses that he's seen from throwing the ball 1,000 times in college or whatever, you know, however many times they would have thrown it, right? So they sort of were sort of like an optical illusion, right, where other teams saw like a black area, you know, they sort of saw something jumping out in relief, right? They saw this ability to have just this expansive, you know, I don't know, to put their arm to use, to throw it all over the place and to build a library of what that looks like. And so I think that is a big difference. And I think it's really notable. You know, Baker Mayfield's another guy who came from an air raid type system. And it just sort of, you know, these guys have been passing since they were children. They've been, you know, throwing the ball all over the place since they were kids. And so I think that was a culmination of what we saw on, you know, last night was a culmination of that.
Well, there's so much of it in the college level now, too, you almost don't have a choice because the NFL doesn't have a control over their farm system. You know, their farm system is college football. And so you don't have control of what's coming to you. And if everyone in the college level is doing it, then you can't, like, really avoid that. And to your point, Jenny, like, this is the first generation. Like, the guys who are, like, the young guys in the NFL, probably the first generation who are, like, playing 7-on-7 from the time they were, like, 8 years old, you know? And so if you've got quarterbacks, to your point, that are throwing – however many balls they throw over the course of an entire year, not just in season, and receivers who have been running routes since they were 8 or 9 years old have been learning the techniques. They're running backs who are being taught, like, no, you got to catch the ball too. Like, this sort of feels like the effect of that too. Like, this is just kind of where football has been going forever, and now you see some of the kids who grew up that way on the greatest stage.
And then when it finally happens like it did last night, you know, there are coaches who adapt, and then there are coaches that really look like they have their pants down at 10 games through the season. And I think it's going to be interesting to see kind of what the shockwaves are. I mean, we all knew, we've been talking on this podcast for weeks about how owners are going to make aggressive offensive hires this offseason. I think that last night certainly cemented that. You know, this is a product that they want on their fields every Sunday. They want this fireworks explosion every week. They want 50 points, not just because it's the way you're winning games right now, but because it's popular. It's something that people want to come and see. It looks good. And so, you know, I just wonder, you know, how many guys who are going to kind of die on that hill of this is my offense, you know, how many owners are going to make radical hires, or at least, you know, be convinced by somebody that they can do they can produce these kind of offenses. I think just the shockwaves from this game, I think, are something that we're not going to feel for a couple of weeks.
Well,
at least.
I think it's like it's owners saying, I want that. And I think it even goes beyond winning and losing. Like, go back to, like, that wasn't automatic. Like, the scene that you had in the Coliseum, like, having Los Angeles, like, that was not automatic. Getting, like, L.A. people engaged in the NFL. If you saw what that looked like, 2 years ago when Jeff Fisher was the coach, like, they weren't the Chargers, but they weren't far off from where the Chargers are. A lot of opposing fans in the stadium, a lot of empty seats, kind of a dead crowd. Like, you watch those games, you turn them on, it was like, ugh, you know, it just doesn't, it looked like, It almost looked like the Rams were, like, playing 16 road games or playing, like, these games on a neutral site. And I think the two games that stick out, it wasn't just this one, it's the Vikings game, too, on that Thursday night, like, where it really felt like there was energy in the building. And, like, I think even from a business standpoint for a lot of the owners, it's like part of it's like this is an engaging product. Like, this is something, like, we can actually sell.
This is the Warriors in basketball. This is, you know, this is anything that, you know, that produces something that transcends the sport right now. And that's what it's doing, right? It's something that, you know, with Thanksgiving, is this going to drop on Thanksgiving or is this coming out the day before Thanksgiving?
Wednesday.
Okay.
Thanksgiving's always on Thursday.
Well, since you guys are supposed to be listening to this the day that it drops, when you go to Thanksgiving, you know, your uncle's going to be talking about this, who rarely engages in football. You know, your aunt's going to know something about Jared Goff and the Rams, and maybe she's not normally a big football fan. And so I think that this is something that, you know, the NFL was that needed, and they got it in a huge way.
Here's what I wonder, though. Like, I feel like there are a couple teams that have been operating this way, and just they don't talk a ton about it, but they've been – and the Saints, I think, have operated this way for a while, and I think the Patriots,
I think they talk a ton about it, though.
The Patriots are a good example of a team. Like, the Patriots, like, offensively, and Jenny, you did all the reporting on the Mahomes story. It's interesting when you ask around, like, who's doing the college stuff? Like, everyone always drops the Patriots in there, and no one, it's almost like that doesn't, like, resonate with people, but, like, Josh McDaniels is doing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't resonate, right? Because right. I thought, like, the Patriots-Chiefs game, like, yeah. I thought that game was better. Like, yeah. I mean, maybe it's because we were there, but I didn't watch that game last night and be like, oh my God, this is the greatest game on earth. Of course it was entertaining, but I sort of enjoyed the Patriots game better because you saw Mahomes kind of figuring out what the Patriots defense was doing to him. He was challenged, and, you know, a lot of the touchdowns were on, like, sloppy plays, right? Football coming out, defensive touchdowns, and so I don't know. Like,
so you're with Trent Dilfer.
What did Trent Dilfer
you
say?
See Trent Dilfer. I'll look at it. It was something along the lines of it was very much like the contrarian, like, you know, football. It was definitely like the football, like hard.
Like Jenny is sub contrarian right now though, because the contrarian take, the real hardliner contrarian take, you know, on Tuesday morning was, well, what happened to defense? I missed defense. That was stupid.
Well, there were players, you know? Like, I think was Richard Sherman and okay. Honey Badger, yeah. Like those guys, like there were a couple of guys that came out here. Right. Here it is. So amazing. All right. This is at Dilfer's Dimes. We love Trent. Trent's great. Like, does a good job with his Twitter account and everything else. Obviously knows more football than all three of us combined. His tweet, this was actually like right when the game ended too. Amazing fandom experience, really cool to watch. However, overall, it was bad ball. Reckless and balls to the wall doesn't mean good football. Sean Payton was the happiest man in the world
watching that.
He didn't hashtag it. He gave the mention at NFL.
Okay, well,
so maybe he's trying to get that message up to 345 Park.
You know what this is exactly is? It's like the quarterback who throws a touchdown pass for 40 yards and his position coach gives him a minus on the play because he didn't make the right read, right?
Right.
That's exactly what we're doing right now.
Well, you're not off the hook. You definitely are. You're on the hook for this too. You're with Trent.
I'm leading the charge in this pod room. I am with Trent on this.
Yeah, absolutely. You're taking Trent's message and bringing it here into the podcast room. Okay, we're going to get to the news, and we're going to get right there with the Saints. News item number one for the week, the Saints blew out the Eagles 48-7 at the Superdome, leaving the defending Super Bowl champs at 4-6. New Orleans remains in the driver's seat for home field throughout the NFC playoffs, holding the tiebreaker over the Rams. And guys, we'll start with the Saints. I do want to address the Eagles here. I think the Saints are the best team in football right now. I think one of the things I think that's important for all these teams, it's a little thing, but handling success. They beat the Rams, and I think everybody would expect there's some sort of letdown. Well, they've scored, I think it's 99 points over the last 2 weeks, completely blew the Bengals off the field in the cold in Ohio, then come home, and again, there's this wounded animal. The Eagles are limping in, sort of a must-win situation for them, and they choked the Eagles out before it was like almost like, but like felt like before they even got off the bus, they were beaten. And so, I just look at the Saints. I see the killer instinct. I also think that they're more well-rounded. They have do you look at the volume of players on defense there? The offenses are great. Like the Saints, I think you can pick them with the Saints and the Chiefs and the Rams. They're all really great offenses, right? Breeze has the playoff experience, and I think defensively they've just got better depth, and like, it's just a more well-rounded group than what you have with either of the other teams. So I still think the Saints are the best team in football.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what I wrote on Sunday was I just think that they're doing the little things better than everybody else. You know, they have, you know, a second-year offensive tackle blowing Fletcher Cox 5 yards off the ball so that Alvin Kamara can cut off his hip. Their pick routes that, you know, their second or third tight end runs are so clean, and they cause, you know, such disruption without these illegal collisions that cause flags. I mean, you know, I just went and I would flip to random plays, successful plays that they had on Sunday against the Eagles, and offensively or defensively, and say, wow, there's three guys on that defensive line that can take up two defenders.
Yep.
How easy is that then? Not easy, but how much better does that make life for Cam Jordan, who's a great pass rusher, you know? And so I think that, you know, while we talk a lot about Breeze and Kamara and Michael Thomas, deservedly so, this team is just layered with people who are doing little things very well all the time.
And I think, like, you know, like when I was covering the Patriots, I remember – like, you would always think, like, the way you could tell they were in trouble was, like, when it was, like, everyone would fall back, well, they got Brady and Belichick. It was like, okay, like, that's great, like, but you could tell eventually that was going to catch up with them. When it always fell back to, like, God, they're, like, becoming too reliant on those guys. And we have seen those years from the Saints where it's like, well, they got Breeze and Peyton, right? Like, we've certainly seen years where it's just they don't have a whole lot else around them. I'm with you. I think it's everything that's around those two now. Like, I think this may be a better roster than the one that won the Super Bowl in 2009.
The way they're running up the score reminds me of a team desperate to get into the college football playoff and needs like a, you know, a margin of victory.
The strength play.
Of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like really like, we got to make sure we're in the playoff here and we score as many points on the opposition
no
as
question.
Possible.
No question. All right. So you guys out on the Eagles now? Do we think they're dead?
That was a demoralizing performance. I mean, they just, Carson Wentz, three interceptions, 156 yards or something?
Yep.
I mean, zero fantasy points is really what I noticed, although I was not starting him. I mean, we'll get to the fantasy update later. But I mean,
wow, he's on your bench.
No, I was just scrolling scores to ensure that I was, my standing in the league was secure.
And we'll get to that.
we'll get to that later. The interesting thing is, Peter King wrote the idea of this, he sat in with the Saints when they were game planning. They were talking about make Carson Wentz win it. And like the loss of Jay Ajayi is really huge for this team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not that they're not, like, they just don't have any kind of rhythm with the run game. I mean, it seems like they're running, maybe it's not the number of run plays, but they have absolutely no rhythm. This back by committee thing doesn't seem to be working. And I feel like that's really thrown the offense off. And so, obviously it's like blah to say, because everyone's looking at passing and we're watching this great passing explosion. Mm-hmm. But last year they were really balanced, right?
Yep.
And so that was a huge part of their ability to win with Foles or Wentz.
Right. And on defense, like the amount of injury, and this is a team that dealt with injuries great last year. They lost Jason, like not just Wentz, they lost Jason Peters, they lost Jordan Hicks. Like they're like impact players they lost last year. But the amount of injuries they've had at corner, like the guys, like there was, I tweeted it on Sunday, like there was some guy named Callahan I'd never heard of before that was like covering Michael Thomas at the end of that game. So I think it's that. Like I think it's personnel, like you said, it's Ajayi's injury, it's their injuries in the secondary. I also like sort of feel like this is a team that really, really enjoyed winning a championship. Really enjoyed winning a championship. And I think that the parade probably lasted a little longer than it has for some teams we've seen in the past. And last year, that was a hungry, nasty, edgy team last year. And it doesn't feel that way anymore. Watching them play, that just doesn't, like, there's not the urgency to them. And I don't know, like, I guess it's one of those things, when you see it, like, it's just, they look flat, they look unemotional. Like, it's just, there's something missing there.
Doesn't help that their fan base is routinely booing them, and we're still within the year window of them winning a Super Bowl.
Well, they booed them at the opener.
Do you guys believe that there should be a grace period or no?
Yes.
They should be being booed at halftime of their opener. But, it is interesting to your point that, like, during training camp, I remember Malcolm Jenkins wanted the banners taken down in the locker room, right? Didn't want the Super Bowl banner in the locker room. And I remember after, at the opener, they didn't go out for the unveiling of the, the banner in the stadium. And afterwards, I remember Chris Long just kept saying, we can't just pick up where you left off. And perhaps in retrospect, that was the veterans like overcorrecting for a sense that they felt in the locker room.
Right, right. Yeah. Like we've talked about, and we'll talk about Marone here in a second, but we've talked about Doug Marone. Like suspending Jalen Ramsey as a warning shot. Like maybe that's exactly what that is with Jenkins and Long. It's
right.
Like they see it.
They saw
and they
it.
They know. Yep. And those are guys who like Long won a championship.
And have
Jenkins,
won elsewhere, right.
Jenkins
yeah.
won a championship. And so they probably have a pretty good idea of what it looks like when it's not right.
Right.
And maybe went and saw that. Okay. Connor, news item number two.
The Cowboys won their second straight in impressive fashion, slowing down a hot Falcons offense and riding Ezekiel Elliott's 201 scrimmage yards to a 22-19 win. I need to talk to the script writer on that one.
Sounds
I don't
like
know.
You didn't quite so, agree yeah. with the impressive adjective there.
I thought it was an impressive win. The Falcons played well offense. Maybe not the week, but they statistically, they'd been really good.
You thought it was a statement win for the Cowboys.
I think the style of win here matters. Like I think the fact that like I think that team is constructed to play that team is constructed to have Ezekiel Elliott like go for 200 yards. Like that's like if
what could go wrong?
Like the way that they're built, like the way that they're built, like they need that sort of thing to happen. And I talked to Stephen Jones about it actually a little earlier today, and he pointed out, he's like, well, I think it's Amari Cooper. And he's like, everyone was crowding the box. Like there was nothing threatening anyone on our offense other than Zeke before this. And now we've actually put someone out there where the defense has got to pay attention to Amari Cooper at the very least. And that's why things are opening up for Zeke. If you look at the team, like I think you've got obviously the investment in the offensive line. And so that lends to being like having a tailback that's going to have, you know, big games like this. And the defense is a lot better than it's been. And so I think the Cowboys sort of constructed this team based on who their quarterback is to be a running game and defense type team. And so to win that game that way, I think it's one of those things where it's like, okay, like this is sort of how they drew it up. Doesn't mean they're going to win a championship. But I do think you can win. You can, like, they can win the NFC East with that formula, because that's exactly what they had in mind when they were putting the team together.
And then, okay, so then let's suppose that they sort of limp into the playoffs with a 10-6 record in a division where, you know, Alex Smith went down. Yep. The Eagles are struggling, the Giants are struggling, and then you know don't make a head coaching change, even though your offense has been pretty unimaginative. Yep. And then, you know, because you go to the playoffs, it's hard to make a coaching change. Obviously, it's happened before. We saw it last year, but, you know, then
we've seen that before too, where making the playoff, like, I think we were talking right before we started taping here, like, the, you know, Jim Caldwell in Detroit, like, Bob Quinn wanted to go with Matt Patricia all along. They make the playoffs in year one, and it's like, okay, like, well, we got to kind of stick with this. It's just there are those situations where maybe it's time for a change, and a team takes advantage of a situation like the Cowboys are in the NFC East right now, and it's like, okay, well, we can't fire him now. Like, we got to hold on. We got to keep this going. So possible the Cowboys are in that situation.
I still think the Eagles are going to win the division. I have no faith in this. Yeah, I just, you know, I did get
so
a lot.
So what is it? Is it Dak? Is it, like, what is it that you don't like?
Yeah, I just think this is underwhelming. This isn't, you know, this isn't the Jaguars. They're almost set up, you know, I guess you would say, are they set up to any team similar in the NFL? They're Jaguars with a better quarterback, but not as good of a defense. And so, you know, where do you kind of put that in terms of how that's going to be successful down the road? But, yeah, I mean, the Eagles, I mean, I got a kick out of, you know, a few Giants columns being written about Odell Beckham's 9-7 premonition coming true after two big wins here. So, you know,
right, they'll pull an Aaron Rodgers, run the table. Yeah. I don't know. Giants are 3-7.
I pulled up the Cowboys schedule. The Redskins, everybody knows they play them on Thanksgiving. I think that's a very winnable game. You should win that game for the Cowboys based on the fact
they don't win that game.
Yeah, the fact that Alex Smith is out, and they've had injuries in their offensive line, everything else. The Saints, I think that's a loss. The Eagles, that's at home. They should win that game on paper. Then they play at the Colts. And then their last two games are the Bucks, who are probably going to be just playing out the string, dead men walking at that point. And then at the Giants in week 17.
I don't know. I heard a lot of losses in there. Saints, Colts. I don't think
Saints
the Eagles.
Saints and Colts are losses.
Saints and Colts. And then I think that Eagles game probably sets up the division.
That puts you at 9-7. If the Saints and Colts were the only losses there, that puts you at 9-7. And I think you guys agree with me on this. 9-7 is probably going to be good enough to win that division.
That's why the Giants could run the table, according to area media.
Well, let's just pull up the Giants schedule real quick. All right, so the Giants play at the Eagles this week. Not impossible that they win that one. Play the Bears at home.
Ooh.
At the Redskins, Titans at Colts, Cowboys.
Oh, see, these Colts, you know, Colts games are really throwing
a wrench. Maybe I'm overreacting now. Maybe I'm going too far in the other direction. But, like, I think the Colts are probably one of, like, the 10 best teams in the league right now.
The Colts have been fun to watch. I mean, that...
They whooped the Titans.
That was a big... I mean, against the Titans.
Now, that is a win. Now, that is an impressive win with a hot offense.
Correct.
That would earn those.
I'm with you on this one, Connor. This side of the table is against script writer.
All right. Well, Jenny, let's go to news item number 3 and see if you got any edits for me there.
All right. The Steelers came back from a 16-6 deficit in Jacksonville, with Ben Roethlisberger scoring the decisive points in a 2016 win. The Jaguars have lost 6 straight, so that's a pretty down the line script.
I think it's
right
pretty.
There.
Yeah, I think it was pretty
it's a biting final sentence.
Pretty
there.
Straightforward.
Lost,
that
is a biting final sentence.
Very to the point. Very to the point. That's what I'm trying to do here. So, the Jaguars, like, it's interesting. Like, the Jaguars are interesting to me because they've got all these cap problems on the horizon going into 2019. They probably don't have a quarterback. Like, I don't. They're going to be in a really, really weird spot coming out of this year. And, I mean, this is assuming the season's over, and I don't think there's any way they bounce back from this. They'd have to win out, and even then, I'm not sure that would be enough to win the AFC South. It's strange because they just reset everything like 2 years ago, or a little less than 2 years ago. And, Connor, I don't know what they do. Like, it's just a weird situation for that organization to be in, where they're going to have these cap issues with a lot of, like, good players in their prime and no quarterback.
I thought it was interesting, though, that they went through – it took them less time to shoot down the fact that they were trading Jalen Ramsey than it did the Browns to say that they weren't interviewing Condoleezza Rice for their head coaching job. Yeah. I mean, it says a lot about how they view the pieces currently on their roster. But, you know, I think this is just one of those things that happens. I think that we would have been dismissive of the Jaguars if they didn't go for it, mm-hmm. based on how last year went. And I think that, you know, whether this leads to changes or not, I think you have to acknowledge the fact that they saw this short window. Yep. They saw these inefficiencies. They gobbled up all these defensive players, and they said, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it now.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. You lost your running back, which was essentially the quarterback of that team. And, you know, and this is where they are.
I think it's part of it, too, Jenny, is like the culture in that place is sideways. Like, I think it's they were built to be Seattle. Like, Gus Bradley was the coach, and the idea in building it that way is like, I don't care if the guy, I don't care if this guy's a bleep head. I don't care if this guy's got a huge personality. Bring me everybody, and we can handle it. And one of the underrated things about Pete, I think, is his ability to balance all of that. Like, even though that blew up in the end, like, he was able to hold that thing together for a half decade. Like all those huge personalities, everything else. It's hard to build a team that way, and I think that's part of it too. Is like, things go sideways a little bit. You have a little success, so everybody wants like a little bigger chunk of the pie, you know? And then you start to lose a few games in a row, and I think this sort of thing happens.
You know, we make these comparisons a lot, given the history that Connor and I have covering the Jets, but it really does remind me of the 2009-2010 Jets, right? They loaded up on defensive stars. They bring in guys like Jason Taylor, brought LaDainian Tomlinson. They have an offense powered by the run game and a quarterback that they're sort of masking with the defense and the ground game. And then, you know, 2011, they try to open up the offense to Sanchez, and that win against the Patriots, Albert, I mean, you really had that. They were putting more on Bortles, and it seemed like maybe he could make that step, but then the bottom fell out. He couldn't make the step, and the same thing happened with Sanchez. So then you had this team that was built to win now. All of a sudden, you have an issue at the quarterback position, and then you've got these huge personalities in the room, and it culminated with a New Year's Day explosion where Santonio Holmes had to be, you know, benched and taken out of the offensive huddle because he was sniping at guys. But really, we've seen a lot of that. I mean, it's really a perfect comparison, in my opinion.
Was that the Tebow year?
No, that was the next year. Tebow year. Yeah.
The Tebow year was 11? No, 12?
12.
So that was 2011, and then the season sort of. They brought in Tebow a few months later, and it was sort of, you know.
Yeah, and then they were broadcasting their entire practice live. Like, right, wasn't Sal Pal there? He was going on the air with like sunglasses on. And you had like they were going live.
Well, there
with,
was
like,
liveness, but then I you correct me if I'm wrong. There was a great deal of done to protect the cameras from the Tebow portion because it was supposed to be this weaponized secret.
Well,
some kind, right?
There was there was a wall, you know, one of those walls put up at practice, and you could only report certain things. But yes, it was live coverage of, you know, Sal Powell was embedded in Cortland. It was a little chaotic of a training camp. And then, of course, Tebow ran through shirtless. Now, I will say that Tebow was from the Jacksonville area, so perhaps the Jaguars, in search of a spark, could go down this route. I like it.
If Shad Khan's listening, I think that'd be good for business too. You know,
selling like, maybe seats, man. Sanchez famously said,
"You're 3-7 right now. You're 3-7 right now. Maybe like to combat the potential no shows in November and December. Maybe bring back old lefty.
You know, and I guess this is relevant now that Mark Sanchez is back in the
NFL.
That's
true.
He deserves like some to round this out with some happiness. Just like recounting some of this is just like." Man, it was not fun for us, and I can't imagine what it was like to be the quarterback.
He should write a book.
It would be an interesting ride.
If he was honest, like Mark Sanchez could probably write a really, really interesting book. Because there was the whole situation at the beginning with the girl and all of that. Remember that? Like all the way back. I think it was a rookie or a second year.
There were a couple things along the way. There were some bumps in the road. But I have to say that it's kind of sad, Albert, because all of your references are like the Patriots dynasty, and Connor and I are like, the 2010 Jets are
that?
A really good corollary.
Yours are way more interesting than mine. All right, news item number 4, Lamar Jackson ran the ball 27 times for 117 yards as the Ravens beat the Bengals 24-21 at home on Sunday. This is another one of those teams. And the reason I included this, this is another one of those teams that's in a really weird spot because potential coaching change on the horizon, rookie quarterback who needs to be managed a certain way, but you've got the coaching staff who's clearly like got a like, – it's at least in the back of your head, the idea of job security. So maybe you're doing things to win. It's just a really, really strange situation. And 27 carries for Lamar Jackson. Like, I don't care who you are. 27 carries for Lamar Jackson is too much. I know that wasn't the intention. They went in the game. They wanted him to throw it 25 times. They wind up not hitting that mark. Part of it, I'm sure, is like RPOs and him deciding to keep the ball in certain situations. But, God, the Ravens are in a – they've got a really – their defense has been rebuilt. They've got a really, really good defense right now. And, like, what do you do if you're them? Do you go back to Flacco? Do you – I think you wrote about it, Connor. Like, do you stick with Lamar? Do you play this way? Can you play this way?
Yeah, well, I think my point was you can't go back to Joe, but you can't do exactly what they're doing now, right? And I think that what we saw with Lamar Jackson was what we saw in the preseason and a lot of what we saw during games at Louisville, where he gets better as he gets warmer during games and he makes better throws in the third and fourth quarter than he does in the first and the second quarter. But his tendency is to run. And I think what's interesting about the Ravens right now is if you're John Harbaugh, you know it's probably going to come to an end unless you make a change. You do worry about the durability factor there, but look at your remaining schedule. You're the best team against the run that you're going to play from here on out is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're the best team. They have the Oakland Raiders, the Atlanta Falcons, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Cleveland Browns. The Raiders are 30th against the run, the Falcons 21st, Chiefs 22nd, the Chargers 18th, the Browns 27th. I mean, you know, why not? You know, if you're worrying about six games to save your job, you want to stay here, presumably. It looks like he's got a nice setup there in Baltimore. Be Navy for 6 weeks. Be hard to prepare for. Be a pain in the butt and run the ball down teams' throats. It's November and December. I don't see where the problem is.
Now we're going to pop Bet, one of our editors at the site. She's coming in and pinch hitting as a producer for us today. Big Bucks fan. I think that's the first time all year I've heard anybody refer to the Bucks as the best of anything.
I'm not saying just to do what they did against the Bengals. They're going to slowly open it up.
Here's what I worry about, though. He's not Cam Newton. Like, he's not 270 pounds. And I look at him and I look at his size, and it's just like he's built like a basketball player. You know, like he's not this big tank. And the reason like you could do that with like Tebow and Cam is like because those guys are freaking massive, you know, and like this is not that guy.
We've also seen Bill O'Brien alter his approach with Deshaun Watson, though, where there was a point week four where we all thought that he was going to get
fired.
Watson killed,
right?
You know, and since then, you know, he has adjusted and everything is sort of working out a little better. Yeah. I think that there are things that they can borrow from other teams that can make this work a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Jenny. It's sort of a test to the coaches and. They came up with a plan before they drafted Lamar. Like, this is how it's going to work if we draft him. They wind up getting him. It's going to be fascinating when Flacco's healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, Harbaugh had a little bit of an edge when it was, you know, I think Marvin Lewis had said they can't run him this many times in a game. And then Harbaugh had a little bit of an edge implication that, you know, Lamar couldn't pass. And so I think that's only going to make them more motivated to have him pass.
And I think that's Harbaugh, like, also, like, making sure his player knows he has his back.
Right,
because
exactly.
That, like, Lamar is sensitive
definitely.
To that stuff.
We saw at the Combine how sensitive Lamar was, too, and understandably so, to the implications that he would be a wide receiver or something else. And Ozzie Newsome, I remember, he's a quarterback. He's on our board as a quarterback. The Ravens kind of indicated their interest in him early on by standing up for him then.
Now, to be fair, the Ravens have sort of brought that on themselves by playing him other places, too.
Right.
Like, so the Ravens like can say that, but, like, this is sort of on them too because they have used him as like a slash weapon.
I think what this boils down to, and the only reason I know this is because I've spent the last two mornings arguing with Baltimore area radio stations about this.
Yeah.
I apparently touched a nerve, but you know, there's a lot of people are saying the counter to this is, well, what if they need to win a shootout? You know, don't you go back to Joe Flacco? Can Joe Flacco win a shootout? And, you know, I think you looked at the team's stats independent of Lamar Jackson before this, they were, I think, 15th to 18th in 40-plus yard passes, and they were 18th to 20th, I think, in 20-plus yard passes. This team wasn't winning a shootout anyway. Yeah. This team needed to rethink the way that they were playing.
Well, here's where I'm with you. Where I'm with you is, like, I think if you look at the Ravens, previous to Lamar getting in there, what is there that's like, on Saturday night, the defensive coordinator is like, can't get to sleep at the team hotel? Like, nothing, right? Like, is there anything like that really scared you if you're a defensive coach about the Ravens? I mean, their best receivers, what, Michael Crabtree or Smokey Brown? Like, it's one of those guys. And it's just like there's nothing that really you look at and you're like, God, how are we going to deal with this?
Ask any defensive coordinator.
Lamar becomes that.
Yeah. What sucks to prepare for? An option. Because, you know, even if you know that it's coming, your guys, it's still a down-by-down test of your guys' ability to read a quarterback. And that's hard.
Yeah. And I remember, like, it's like you see, like, playing high school football, you'd see this. Like, if you played an option team, it was a pain in the ass just because you weren't playing option teams every week. So when it came up, and that's why I think, like, Navy is a pain in the ass or Army is a pain in the ass, because it's like, all right, like, now with a week to, like, with a week to prepare, we got to change everything we do, and all the rules that we have are different. And Lamar probably does that. Like, Lamar probably changes the rules on some of the things that you're doing.
Black Knights of West Point, by the way, 9-2, ranked for the first time since 1996.
That's right, no question.
I remember once when we were covering the Jets, when they went from playing the Patriots to playing Tebow on a short week, and it was a
was that
the game
in Denver?
Yeah,
that
and then they lost, disaster. And he had he had the 2-minute comeback. So just another example.
The craziest thing about, like when you think back to that time, the craziest thing about Tebow mania is that somehow it was happening at the exact same time as Lynn's sanity.
That's true.
Wow. That was isn't that like the two that like is. Like those
phenomenon.
Are those may have been like maybe this entire decade the two like weirdest things, like the way the Broncos were winning, like in all of sports.
I think there are,
like,
weirder things that have happened this decade.
I'm saying in sports, specifically in sports. Like, it's just something that came out of nowhere, and weird stuff was happening. You had Tebow, where they were winning the game. Like, remember, wasn't it Marion Barber was playing for the Bears, right? And he fumbled. Like, it was like, and it was like, just coughed it up. Like, the Broncos hadn't moved the ball all day, and like Marion Barber just like inexplicably coughs the ball up.
One would say a series of divine miracles,
right? You know? So you had that, and then you had Lynn's sanity, which was just this like guard no one's heard of from Harvard scoring like 40 points a night. And those, like, maybe the two craziest like strings of occurrences like this decade in all of sports, and they happened at the exact same time. It was
Linsanity.
Yeah, it was Linsanity.
The best example, one quick note on Linsanity, just because when else am I going to be able to bring this up?
It's true.
But the best piece of journalism I remember from that era was the New York Post calling 10 of the most expensive restaurants in New York City and pretending that they were Jeremy Lin and Eli Manning and seeing which one they could get an immediate reservation for. 8 out of 10 for Jeremy Lin.
8 out of 10.
Poor Eli.
It was like 3 out of 10 for Eli Manning. This two-time Super Bowl quarterback of the Giants.
And like football royalty. Yeah. Right? Like, poor Eli Manning.
And
poor
an accomplished wine aficionado as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There you go. All right, Connor, news item number 5, our last news item for the week.
The Bears won their 4th straight on Sunday, beating the Vikings 25-20 to open a game-and-a-half lead in the NFC North. They'll play the Lions on Thanksgiving, and I think the big takeaway here, Jenny said it on Twitter, she is a Bear Leaver.
I am a Bear Leaver. I was not sure what to make of this team early on, I have to say. I still think, you know, there are some flaws in Trubisky's game, but I think that, you know, he's gotten... You know, Matt Nagy has given him a ton of support. They have done things in the offense to sort of, you know, put him in positions to succeed. I still think he, you know, his instinct is to run too often. He'll pull down the ball too often. He might miss some throws. But they have a formula that's winning. And, I mean, I did not expect them to beat the Vikings. I thought that was a game when I really flipped the switch to Bear leaving.
I really want to Bear leave. I really want to Bear
but
leave.
But you don't after that game? You're
I
still
really
unsure?
Want to because I love, like, the talent on the roster. I think the coach is going to be a star. Like, I think Nagy's going to be – but, like, it wasn't the Buffalo-Jacksonville game, okay? It wasn't the Buffalo-Jacksonville game. But you remember in that game, like in the playoffs last year, believe it or not, that was a playoff game last year. Jacksonville-Buffalo.
I was going to say.
That just sounds, wow.
When you said the Buffalo-Jackson game, I was like, what
the hell
are you
talking about?
Okay, but you guys remember, like, in that game, like, the Jaguars had to turn to Bortles as a runner. And I think we all should have seen that as, like, sort of a warning, like a little bit of a
right.
warning sign.
I agree
like,
with this.
Like they're like they don't think that they can win with him playing the position conventionally. And I sort of saw a little bit of that in the Viking game,
yes,
like where
that's
they were
true.
Deploying him as a runner. And we've seen some encouraging signs from him, but I just like I look at that and I'm like, do they really like? Is there really like the faith that he can go out and win a game for them? And doesn't mean they won't make the playoffs. I love the talent on defense, but I just like look at it and it's just like, are they in a lot of ways like maybe they're the Jag? Maybe they're the 2017 Jaguars, right? Like maybe they're the team that has a lot of things right now. And it's just like, all right, like let's see how well the quarterback plays when it really matters.
My counterpoint would be that I think he's got a really good partnership with Matt Nagy.
You're
he's
really
like
entrenched. Investment.
I am, and I also really would like to see them run
She's
the lollipop
in the den.
Play. And yep. I waited all game for that. There was a play where the guy went on a fly sweep twice, and I thought we were on the verge of seeing lollipop, and then it didn't happen.
Now, that was in Jenny's story on Andy Reid. And just so everybody out there knows, you can go look that up at the site. All right.
You can buy the physical copy of the magazine too.
It's
you can.
Not it's a story plug though. It's just a general excitement.
But I will say, just so everybody knows, that play was actually run. It's the lead to Jenny's story. It actually was run in the preseason, but we have not seen it in regular season.
And I think
yet.
It'll come up because I think generally teams, you know, they wait a while so that it's not on their film of the last four games that most teams are looking for. I'm still waiting for lollipop. Maybe it'll rear its head in the playoffs. I do think they can make the playoffs now. I did not think that a few weeks ago.
Do you think they win the division?
I do think they can. I didn't think they could before. I think they can now.
I'm teetering on the Vikings. I picked them to win the Super Bowl before the year. You know, whoever you pick to win the Super Bowl, you sort of like you hold on to them longer than. But the Vikings offensive line's a problem, like and when Cousins is one of these guys who, I really like Kirk as a quarterback, but things need to be right around him. Like, and one of the reasons like he was very good in Washington for those couple years was because they had Trent Williams, they had Brandon Scherff, and they had all these great offensive line and. He can. I think I'd even go so far as to say, like, I think Kirk can win with lesser receivers, but I think things have to be sort of like he has to be protected and things have to be right around him and he has to be able to do everything on time and things have to be sort of by the book, and that's what I worry about with the Vikings right now. In fact, I'm sort of starting to think that Case Keenum might have been a better quarterback for them. Now that may qualify as a hot take. I sort of think like the style that Keenum plays mitigates the issues that they had on the offensive line, where he could play a certain way, where it was like, okay, like now you got to deal with him breaking the pocket and playing off schedule and scramble plays and all that different stuff. And Kirk's just not that kind of quarterback.
Didn't think we were going to go there. That's for sure. This is dovetailed to a place where I'm not really prepared to.
I did that on the fly, by the way. So I didn't come in thinking I was going to say that, and I can't believe I actually said it. But I
sometimes Case Keenum takes just emerge from you.
I know that's how it is. Yeah, I mean, like, but that's viable, right? Like,
I don't know. Probably not. I don't think so.
Okay, well, that's a perfect segue right into our fantasy update for the week. Connor, what do we got?
So I decided, I'll just mention right out front that Jenny's team is far more interesting at this point since she's actually in contention for the postseason. But I decided on Sunday to spend my day away from fantasy football to sort of enjoy some of the other things in my life. And so I decided that I was just going to check the score for the first time right here in front of everybody on the podcast.
Oh, there we go.
I've already checked it.
So you know what happened? Yeah.
So, okay, here we go. Opening up the Yahoo app here. All right, so my opponent, I lost 133-57.
Now, did you forget to set like your lineup or anything like that? Or is this just this happened naturally?
No, let's run through these bad boys here. 15 points for Matt Ryan, 0 for Valdez Scantling, 3 for DeSean Jackson, 4 for James Conner, 19 for Leonard Fournette, my boy, 7 for O.J. Howard, -1 for Dalvin Cook, 6 for Mason Crosby, 4 for the Bengals defense, which I was betting on possible, you know, Lamar Jackson meltdown scenario.
Were you throwing this game?
Unfortunately, his opponent had Jared Goff.
My opponent did have Jared Goff. He had Antonio Brown, Aaron Jones, you know, there were some things that they did well. But yeah, I'm Doug Peterson this morning. I'm just sort of searching for answers. That was ugly.
So what's happening in the playoff race, Jenny?
Well, you know, by the way, Monday Night Football seemed to overwhelm the Yahoo app because I woke up this morning and I was like, listen, it says I only had 110 points, but I went to bed and I had 143, got 33 from Tyreek Hill. Apparently the game was just so high scoring that the Yahoo app couldn't keep up. So I'm jockeying for position, but the last time that I kind of like was feeling myself on the podcast, things didn't go so well. So I'm just going to ride it out. Connor is thinking of joining my staff as quality control because he's wow. expected to get fired soon. Yeah. So he will be joining my staff. It's sort of like Marvin Lewis, Hugh Jackson partnership.
Is like the trade deadline passed or could there be some chicanery here?
No, I already entertained that because we were joking about me trading you James Connor, but then I was like, I probably should just do it anyway. And I actually tried and it said that the trade deadline
had
passed.
Oh, man, because I offered him 5 almonds for James Connor,
and
which
I would have taken
was a
it.
Fair price.
Yeah, I still would take it. I'm starving. Yeah.
My fantasy team, by the way, appropriately enough, I lost to Harbaugh's trash this week. This was a big one. This was a big one because Harbaugh's trash came on. Shout out to Jeff Crail, who's the coach of Harbaugh's trash. They came in 10-1. I came in 9-1. I came in 8-2. Chance to have the best record in the league. I put up 130 points and lost.
And you lost.
And I
wow.
lost.
How are you
lost.
Feeling about this weekend, by the way? This is Ohio State, Michigan, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to really.
He does not feel good about it.
That Maryland game, I brought that up. That Maryland game.
Like, if I was a police interrogator, I would know that there was something going on.
So I promised my kids last weekend. I promised my kids I'd take them to the Grinch, right? So this other couple we're friends with, my older son is best friends with their son, and so they bought reserve tickets. Now, I hadn't been to a movie theater in forever, but holy crap, it was incredible. Like, if you buy the reserve tickets, you get like the recliner seats, and like it's unbelievable. So they buy the tickets ahead of time, and like my wife asked me, like, what show do you want to go to? And she's like, well, there's a 3 o'clock and a 5 o'clock. I'm like, whatever. Like, we can go to the 3 o'clock, like, I'll be watching, you know, the Ohio State game will be a blowout by then. Well, it wasn't a blowout. It wasn't even like, Ohio State wasn't even in control at the end. And so for the first hour of the movie, which I figured the game would be over, like worst case, the game's over like 3:15, 3:30, it's a noon kickoff. The game like went into overtime, lasted till like 4:15, and I'm literally watching the game on my phone in the movie theater.
So you were a Grinch.
You missed the Grinch.
Hashtag yeah. Father of the Year.
Speaking of Maryland, bumped to Matt Canada
bumped
off.
Matt Canada.
And Jenny's story.
Yeah, maybe they should. Did they run Lollipop? I have to go check the tape.
You have to go check the tape. All right, guys. Appreciate you coming out. Okay, and before we get into the six pack, I want to tell you guys about the Hair Club. Your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. They understand the emotions you're feeling and know the questions you have. Hair Club is the leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. See for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. I can't give you guys a real life experience because I've got about the thickest hair on the planet. And so I have friends that have been through this. I've got friends who went bald in their 20s. I got friends who went bald in their 30s. Again, I don't know the pain of losing your hair, but I have seen some of my friends go through it, and I can just tell you that the guys who have done something about it, they feel better about themselves. So go to hairclub.com/Breer, that's my last name, B-R-E-E-R, today for a free hair analysis and a free take-home hair kit, all valued at over $300. That's hairclub.com/Breer for a free hair analysis and free hair care kit. Hairclub.com/Breer. Experience your hair and your life at its best. Only with hair care. I am certain that you'll love the club. Okay, we're going to go to the six pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday morning, I put out the call on Twitter for questions. I pick six. If I pick yours, that means you get a little like I hit the little heart on Twitter there on your tweet, and you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one this week from Sean Moss. That's at Vigo the Painting. Why the abiding fascination with college coaches for NFL head coaching positions? Every time there's an opening, a series of college names are linked that rarely come to pass. Well, Sean, if you don't like it, I think you're really not going to like what's going to happen in December and January. I think you're going to hear more college names associated with NFL jobs than you have in the past. And one of the reasons why is what we watched on Monday night was the breaking down of walls between what is college football and what is pro football. We're seeing a lot of things that you see at the college game, that you've seen in the college game for a long, long time, that NFL people would deride and say, that stuff will never work here. We're seeing that, like we talked about earlier, now in the NFL game. And so I think a lot of owners are going to look at Sean McVay. They're going to look at Andy Reid. They're going to look at Matt Nagy in Chicago, and they're going to say, give me that. And I don't know that there's this long list of lines and the long list of names, you know, of guys who can do that that are currently at the NFL level. And so if you can't find the names at the NFL level, either you kind of reconfigure what you're looking for in a head coach, or you go down to the college ranks. And that's why I think Lincoln Riley will be getting a lot of phone calls. I don't know if he'll be interested in leaving Oklahoma, but he'll be getting a lot of phone calls. I think you're also going to see names like Matt Campbell, Matt Rhule. You're going to see college names from college football in the running for these jobs, I think more so than you have in the past. Question number two is from Inyobu at Asgard's Goat. Should Tampa go YOLO and keep Jameis Winston? Look, first of all, we don't know who's going to be making that decision. We don't know who the coach is going to be. We don't know who the GM is going to be. So there's that piece of it. We just don't know in January who's going to be making the call. They are showing right now a willingness to stick with Jameis Winston. If you didn't have a willingness to stick with Jameis Winston, then you wouldn't be risking losing $21 million, which is what the Bucs are doing by putting Winston on the field now. By starting him this week, they're saying, we are willing to take a $21 million risk, because if he gets hurt and he can't pass a physical, no matter what you think of him in March, you're going to be on the hook for that $21 million. And so they are showing a willingness to keep Winston and an open-mindedness to the idea that he could be there beyond 2018. You spent the number one overall pick on him. I mean, if you think there's even a little chance that he can be what you thought he could be when you draft him in 2015, I actually don't think $21 million is too high a price to pay to keep him for an extra year, even if it is holding the fort for a rookie, even if it is just treading water until you get to 2020, when there should be a better quarterback class than there is in 2019, you pull every lever to get it right, that position. And so I wouldn't be against the idea of holding on to him for a little longer than maybe some other people would. Question number three from Justin Cohen. That's at Justin_Cohen. When the Packers fire McCarthy, that's a when, that's not an if. When the Packers fire McCarthy at the end of the year, who do you think are the likely replacement options? I would look at guys that would match up with Aaron Rodgers. And the name that sticks out to me is Josh McDaniels, the Patriots offensive coordinator. I know perception was out there that after the Colts got burned last year that he wouldn't get this opportunity again. I think I sort of think that that's blown over now. It's not like he's not going to have to answer for it in the interview process, but I do think that that's not as big a deal as maybe people thought it would be 9 months ago. And we've heard a lot over the last few months about how what would Aaron Rodgers look like in the Patriots system? What would Aaron Rodgers look like with the advantages that Tom Brady has had? I don't think that stuff comes out. I don't think we hear those things by mistake. I think Aaron Rodgers would be intrigued with the idea of Josh McDaniels. I think Josh McDaniels would be intrigued with Aaron Rodgers. Of course, any coach would. And I think there's a relationship. I think there's a potential match there, maybe where people aren't looking. And after the 2016 season, the Niners were out looking for head coaching candidates, GM candidates. They went way down the road with Josh McDaniels. McDaniels pulled his name out overnight after the Patriots beat the Texans in the divisional playoff. When McDaniels was the front runner for that job, the front runner for the GM job was a top Green Bay personnel man named Brian Gutekunst. Gutekunst is now the GM in Green Bay. They've both done research on each other. I just think that there's a lot of reasons why that relationship would make sense, and why the McDaniels-Rodgers relationship would make sense. So that'd be a name I'd give you. Question number four from Sylvester Valderrama. That's at slyboy_22. Will the Steelers-Bell situation have any impact at all on the next CBA negotiations? No, 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 it won't. I know people think that they see these big headline stories and think that's somehow going to have an effect on CBA negotiations in 2021. Look, the players didn't fight hard against the franchise tag in 2011. I don't think they're going to fight hard against the franchise tag in 2021. The reason why, the number of players it affects is so small. It seems like a big deal to us because there's only because every single one of these is a big deal because they're big names, because they're star players. But the fact is, it affects maybe a half dozen guys every year. There are other things the players are going to fight for that are more important. In 2011, it was making sure you got a bigger percentage of the TV revenue. In 2011, it was making sure that minimum salaries were rising over the course of the new CBA. And they got those things done. I just think at the end of the day, would they like to have franchise tags go away? Sure, they would like to have franchise tags go away. But there are other things that I think that are more important to them based on the number of players that each one of these things affects. And the bottom line is the franchise tag really doesn't affect a huge number of players. In fact, it's not like the NBA doesn't have this too. The NBA has max contracts. Both are sort of the same. It's putting a ceiling on how much guys at the top can make. So I would say no to your question. Question number five from Travis Wingfield. That's at Wingfield NFL. What are the opinions you've heard about around the league about the 2019 draft class, quarterback class? Follow up, any chance Kyler Murray chooses football? My understanding is contractually he can't. Contractually he has to go to the Oakland A's. I'm not sure he would have been a top quarterback prospect based on his size. No, the answer is no. I don't think that he's going to be in play in football, in professional football, in the next few years. He could eventually double back the way Drew Henson did all those years ago, but I think he's going to stick to baseball, stick to his decision, and because he contractually has to. This draft class, this group of quarterbacks, has not developed the way that a lot of people hoped they would. There was a lot of unknown going into this year, and there was a thought at least that, hey, if you know, Justin Herbert and Drew Lock and Will Greer, if they're off the charts, like maybe we get like three or four guys in the first round. That's not the sense I'm getting right now, at least. I think there will be a couple guys that get pushed up the board. You know, we have had a Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State emerge. I think he's a guy to pay attention to. Justin Herbert's been good enough. There's question whether or not he's even going to come out. It's not a great quarterback class. I think the Tua Tagovailoa, Jake Fromm class of 2020 is probably the one that NFL people are looking at and saying that's probably the better class to have a top pick in if you need a quarterback. Finally, question number six from Renee Bunger. That's at RNBWCV. If the Colts win out and Andrew Luck continues his stellar play, would you give him the MVP award? No, I wouldn't. I think Drew Brees is the MVP right now, but Luck has been fantastic. He is all the way back. He is a huge reason why offensively they're able to make it work, even though the skill position talent still just sort of average. The offensive line, you know, and his health obviously are big factors in the fact that he's been able to bounce back. But some of the anticipatory throws he made against the Titans, I think, highlight what type of player he was before the injury and has become again. And so I'm all in on Andrew Luck. I think he is going to be a top five quarterback by the end of the year and going into 2019. And based on the draft class the Colts have in-house now, Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, Darius Leonard, Jordan Wilkins, Nyheim Hines, Deion Kane, eventually Tyquan Lewis, Kamiko Touré. I think the Colts are a legit. The Colts could be a problem if they make the playoffs this year. I think next year they're a force. All right, appreciate you guys coming out, as always, for the pre-Thanksgiving show. As always, we appreciate your feedback. We seek your feedback. We want this to be your show. So you can get me on my Twitter page, at Albert Breer, on my Facebook page, at Albert R. Breer, on my Instagram, at Albert_Breer. Always helps us if you give us the feedback there, or you can give us the feedback on iTunes. That helps too. Just search on iTunes for the MMQB NFL show and leave us a review and leave us a rating. All that stuff helps with the algorithms. We appreciate you guys doing it. And always, always remember to listen to all the MMQB NFL podcasts, including the gambling show, the two shows that Andy and Gary do during the week, the one coming out of the games on Monday morning that you can catch for your Monday morning commute, and, of course, the Deep Dive show later in the week. And as always, this show, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer featuring Jenny Ferentes and Connor Orr. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.